that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Nick Wright. Doug Gottlieb is here, everybody.
What up, man?
What's up, man? Last time I was here, you didn't have hair. Now, all of a sudden, just...
Last time I saw you, you had a little more. It's amazing.
Oh!
Good to see you, Doug.
I walked right into that one.
Okay, no more banging the table. All my coffee just spilled.
It's foamy.
We have a great show. We're happy you're here. Great show for you today. Tons of football to get to heading into week 16 already, believe it or not. But we start this morning to the grand delight of my guy here, Nick Wright, with the best team in the NBA, and that is the LA Lakers. Lakers were in Indy last night facing the Pacers. AD sitting out with the ankle injury. End of the fourth quarter. Lakers down 2, 12 seconds left. LeBron misses the step back three over Miles Turner. He was 0 for 6 from 3 on the night. Rondo tried to save the miss by throwing it off Aaron Holiday. Looks good, but wait. His foot hits the ground just before the ball was out of his hand, so Pacers ball. 11 seconds to go. Pacers up 3 now. Domantas Sabonis missing the free throw. One last chance for the Lakers. Rondo, who's shooting a career-high 45% from 3, cannot hit the game-tying shot. Lakers snap their 14-game road win streak with the 105-102 loss. Here's LeBron James after the game.
Kept our composure, and we did that tonight, too. And we still had an opportunity to win the game. We just didn't. So throughout the winning streak, we was able to keep our composure throughout, you know, adversity, up or down, you know, still being able to make a game out of it, which we did tonight. But sometimes the ball doesn't bounce your way, which is okay. But, you know, that's how it is.
Can't win them all, although maybe we thought the Lakers might be able to. Nick, was last night about missing Anthony Davis, or are there bigger issues that the Lakers are facing?
Well, there's one, I would say, looming issue for the Lakers that we can discuss in a moment. Last night, though, was about you don't have Anthony Davis, your second best player. You don't have Kyle Kuzma again, who should be your third most reliable scorer, even if he's not your third best player. And LeBron was bad, like by his standards, 29-9, 0 of 6 from 3, the free throws near the end. He hit 2 free throws at the end, but he missed 2 the couple possessions earlier that were critical misses. Then Dwight misses a couple, and it's a huge missed opportunity for the Lakers. A, because had they won, they'd be a game away from tying the all-time record for most consecutive road wins. They would have had an opportunity to do that in what is their most difficult game of the entire season, at Milwaukee Thursday. That's the hardest game on the schedule, and now they go into that game with a loss. The looming bigger issue is the greatest player I've ever seen, one of the three greatest players Doug's ever seen, has a free throw problem that's real.
Yeah.
And he's in his head about it. And you even saw, I think we didn't show the highlight, but when they were down 2 on the, or we did show the highlight, the play where Rondo tries to save the ball, LeBron didn't have to take a 3 when he's 0 for 3 from the field there down 2. One of the reasons he does.
Doesn't want to drive.
He didn't want to drive.
Yeah.
And he drove a couple possessions prior, drew the defense to him, kicked it to Caruso for an open look. It was a great shot. He just missed it. But this is right now a real thing for LeBron, which is he has no rhythm at the line, he has no confidence at the line, and he has no routine, which is what is critical to making free throws. And so that's the one looming issue, is watch it. He doesn't need to be 85%, But if he's, and even if he's only around 70%, he has to feel like he's 85%, or else it affects the way he plays at the end of games. Saw that yesterday, so I don't want to overreact. Still the best team in the league. LeBron's still MVP, at least of the Western Conference so far this season. But that is something to watch moving forward.
All right, so the micro is T-Mark's, let's mark the date, December 17th, 2019.
That's the one.
That you run a play for Rondo to take a three at the end of a game. That has never, like, he's been in the league for over a decade. That has never happened. Obviously, that would not be the look that I would be looking for, considering the litany of other options that they have.
I don't even think Rondo should have been on the floor. They could have subbed him out at the free throw.
That part didn't make any sense to me. It didn't make any sense to me either.
You knew you were
going to
need a three there. I don't know why Rondo's on the floor.
Well, there's a little bit of an infatuation with Rondo there from, I think, members of this coaching staff, especially the end of the bench closest to the scoring table, right? Yep. Because they were in the Eastern Conference when Rondo was true Rondo, and he's getting a lot more run than he probably should be.
Yeah, but even then, they weren't running. The Celtics were not running game-ending threes for him. But
No, he would actually be in the post.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and I understand that Victor Oladipo's still not playing, but the Lakers, you don't have Kuzma, you don't have AD. That's 50 points.
Yeah.
That's 50 points on a pretty good night that you don't have. So on the micro, you're going to lose some of these games. It was a winnable game for them. Mm-hmm. Really was. It was right there for the taking. So we'll give some credit to the Pacers. On the macro, I completely agree with you on the LeBron free throw thing. I've been a longtime proponent of why does the NBA not have one and one? The three-point line is deeper than any other three-point line. The lane line is wider. You only get 8 seconds to get across midcourt, 24 seconds to shoot the basketball, right? All these are because
everything's harder.
Everything's
in the NBA
harder because
for the one and one.
Except for the one and one. They used to have three for two way back in the day. I would make it harder. But for LeBron James, it's the part that you nailed, the really smart part, was not just the free throw yips. It's how it affects players. Alonzo Ball had this problem when he was with the Lakers. Has it now at times with the Pelicans, where he won't drive in there to get fouled. He'll avoid contact.
Because he doesn't want to take it.
Right, because it's the embarrassment of being up there and getting super tight. And here's, you know, the greatest player of this generation sitting up there getting tight at the free throw line when he's been to all these NBA finals. But look, I've had the free throw yips. People are going to go and Google and be like, damn, dude, you couldn't make anything. I was a great free throw shooter. With me, it was just like stage fright. You know, my freshman year, I was at Notre Dame. I airballed a free throw against Rutgers. I made the next one. We lose the game. The next day, John McLeod, my head coach, calls me in. He wants to watch game tape. And it's me and him, and we're watching the airball. What happened here? And I'm not saying that he got in my head. I was in my own head. But between, you know, putting on college muscles, changing your shot, your coach, you know.
But you were a different guy at practice than you were in the game.
Right.
In practice, you could hit free throws, and in the games, you couldn't. You got in your
Yes, and then, but there were times in games where I would feel good.
Yep.
And I'd step up there and feel, and there would be times in games where there would be any place on earth I would rather be than at that free throw line.
Yep.
And LeBron James just sometimes, last night was a night where he didn't have from three. You know, even in that kind of weird step back shot that he likes to shoot, that's like his go-to, even that didn't look comfortable, and the free throw didn't look comfortable,
but it affects his game. But in a year where he's now playing point guard and he didn't play point guard, in a year where he's leading the league in assists and that wasn't his thing, you would think that doing something that he's not great at or for the first time or working on wouldn't really give him the yips. How do you get over something like
that? Well, listen, LeBron had a major free throw issue a few years ago, and he fixed it by lane violating on every free throw.
Yes.
He got in a routine.
Yes.
The routine was, you forget what he did before the shot, but right as soon as he released it, he would, before it hit the rim, step over the line. And it went uncalled for 3 months.
It was illegal.
It was technically illegal, but you don't really call lane violations in the NBA. And then during a playoff game, it got called.
Right.
And they called it on consecutive free throws,
right.
And one referee essentially made it, you're not going to be able to do this anymore. And since then, he hasn't gotten back to a routine. Like, you know, you remember exactly what I'm talking
yes.
about, right?
Yes.
And so he's never been a great free throw shooter. But the last 2 years, it's the worst he's been. And now, again, he hit two free throws critical late in this game to tie the basketball game, but he missed two prior, and then Dwight Howard missed two when they had an opportunity to take this win.
Look, I want to turn this into LeBron, Jordan, and all that other stuff. I actually think that what I'm going to say about LeBron is an ultimate compliment. It's like Peyton Manning could be the greatest quarterback we've ever seen. And he never threw a tight spiral, right? Like, he was Duck City. And he played indoors, and he still wouldn't. LeBron James has never been a truly confident jump shooter. Like, consistently. Like, most of these guys, like Kobe Bryant, he was terrible in Game 7 when they won the last NBA championship. But he shot, what, 27
Six
shots?
Six of 24.
Six of, and he thought the next one was going in. Like, LeBron, it comes and goes. Like, I actually think he's one of those guys that's too smart where he's thinking about his shot.
Well, that's the part that I would, where I don't think it's about he's not a confident jump shooter. I think it's that LeBron's biggest asset has always, it's never been his size, his body, his speed, it's his brain. And he is always thinking two plays ahead and almost supercomputering the basketball game. That works against you at the free throw line. That the overthinking, and it works against you in figuring out, but if I go here, am I going to get hit here? Am I going to end up at the line?
Remember last game when Boogie Cousins pulled him aside and was like, you're overthinking. Just go out there and play. You're overthinking. But when you're at the stripe, when you're at the line, that all you do is think. It can't be instinctual. You have to think.
If you remember, even the series that they won against the Spurs, there were game seven, he was the only one who could stand up straight and made shots. But game six, you know, and other games, the Spurs would dare him to take
games
that mid-range.
Games one through five, they dared him. And game six and seven, he hit him.
Right.
It was the difference.
But the point is that people have believed you could get in his head. And what I wanted to say, when I want to compare him to Peyton Manning, is like, he's going to probably be the league's all-time scoring leader. And he's not really a scorer. He doesn't love scoring like he loves passing. Right. He's going to score all these points. And he's not really a natural dead-eye jump shooter that has no conscience like most of these other guys do. That's the most interesting part about the spectacular career that he's had.
Lakers still top number one in the league.
Best record in basketball. They'll beat Milwaukee Thursday and everyone will be fine.
We shall see. All right, last night back in the NBA, the West's second best team, the Clippers, beat the Suns convincingly 120-99. Kawhi back on the court after missing the last game. He had 20 points in just 27 minutes. Before the game, head coach Doc Rivers was asked about LeBron's comments in regards to load management and had some interesting comments in reply. Take a listen.
It's our philosophy. I don't know what theirs are. You know, I think theirs is whatever LeBron says it is, to be honest. That makes a lot of sense to me. But, no, I think I like what we're doing. I think it's a smart thing to do. And, you know, who knows? We'll see at the end.
Okay, shots fired. You got two sides here. You got Doc
I love
and Kawhi.
It.
Look, you got
look,
LeBron.
I grew up in Southern California. Okay, the idea that the Clippers are on the same plane or in anywhere discussion, the same plane of the Lakers, it just blows my mind. Like,
It should, because they're not, and they haven't played as such, and they won't be at the end of the year. But that's fine. We can pretend this is a rivalry until the full season plays out. But you said this coming from Doc Rivers is rich beyond belief. There is no team in basketball that has bent over backwards more to the will of one player than his Clippers with Kawhi Leonard.
Sure.
Kawhi said, trade these guys and all your picks for Paul George. No problem, sir. What else can we do for you? The Clippers said all offseason, we're not going to do the load management stuff that Kawhi did in Toronto. He's missed 8 of 29 games. The Clippers don't want to be engaging in this type of load management. Putting this, you know who they'd love to be able to load manage more? Paul George, the guy who had surgery
double
on
shoulders,
both shoulders and had to miss the first 13 games of the first month plus of the season. I think it was 13 games. But they can't because they're load managing Kawhi Leonard. It is unbelievable that Doc Rivers would say, the Lakers' philosophy is whatever LeBron says. Ask head coach Ty Lue how that sounds. Oh, wait, he didn't get the job if it was all about what LeBron says. So now there is a history here. Doc Rivers, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett have never gotten over the Heat ending the Big Three in Boston. Paul Pierce goes on TV whenever he gets the opportunity and still fixes his mouth to say, oh, I was better than LeBron. You look like a fool. Kevin Garnett just yesterday went on Bill Simmons' podcast and was asked about why the Heat beat the Celtics, ended the Big Three, and he said basically the fix was in because the league wanted the Heat to win, not because, you know, they beat you in five in the first year LeBron was in Miami with LeBron ending the series on a 10-0 personal run, and then the single greatest game he's ever played in your building in Game 6, 45-15-5, to officially end the Big Three era. Doc Rivers and that crew have had something, a grudge against LeBron since then, and this is a needle, but it's a needle that is utterly hypocritical given the fact that the Clippers are the team that is doing whatever their superstar wants them to do.
Listen, you're right in calling it hypocritical. It'd also be fair to say that LeBron has, there were times in Cleveland where he went on a little bit of a high, he went a bit of a LeBron hiatus.
Once. Oh, okay. He had a knee injury and missed 2 weeks.
But here's the bigger thing is, I do think LeBron kind of started this one, right? When they asked him about the load management, he clearly wanted to make it some sort of point of, hey, man, you know, I represent the bigger thing in the league, and I don't do that. That was a shot across the bow at what the Clippers are doing. You're right. The Clippers could not get into business with Kawhi Leonard unless they bowed to his whims of, you want to play 60 games? No problem.
No problem.
Right? And then, of course, the roster, in order to land him, they and the weird thing about LeBron is, the hard part about LeBron is he actually doesn't tell you anything. It's the opposite. This is the first time he's actually talked about wanting to play all these games. LeBron, the hard part to coaching LeBron is you have to kind of tell by his mood and how he's playing if he likes you, if he doesn't like you. He's a body language guy. It's actually the opposite of how of what Doc is saying. But I think that the needle Doc is poking the bear with was poked. He felt like it was poked with him and LeBron taking a shot at load management.
But here's the thing. LeBron was, when you say he was saying he's an ambassador. And
yes.
He's right.
No. He's right.
And I think LeBron also cares about the health of the sport for selfish and selfless reasons. Selfish meaning as far as his long-term, you know, financial gain. The bigger the NBA is, the bigger he is. And selfless reasons because he's been the face of the league for 15 years, so he has that responsibility. And it is important that what Kawhi Leonard is doing does not metastasize to the rest of the league.
But it already has.
No, it has not.
Absolutely
Who
has.
Else is load managing?
There's plenty of players who have missed
a game.
Yes.
But that is not the problem here. Because there was, listen.
You say potato, I say potato. Are they missing the volume of games
that's Kawhi, the whole thing.
No, but the idea of load managing is understanding the player, understanding his body, understanding the schedule, and giving him a night off every now and again.
And nobody has an issue with that. Nobody has an issue with guys playing 76 games. No one.
Oh, we absolutely have an issue with it sometimes. When LeBron didn't play, what was in Memphis 2 years ago?
Oh, no, of course. If LeBron does something, it's controversial, even if it makes sense. But the 76, missing 5 or 6 games throughout the season, that's what the Spurs originally did when they invented this thing with Tim Duncan. That was not the issue. The issue is the reigning finals MVP playing 3 out of 4 games, missing 25% of the season after last year missing 25% of the season. If that were to infect Harden and Giannis and Anthony Davis, it would be deadly for the sport. That's what LeBron was speaking out against, and I think rightfully at the time.
All right, let's move on. Talk some football now. To the NFL, Patriots, they're 11-3, but it's a little misleading 11-3 given their competition, given how many games they've won solely based on that defense. Tom Brady has his lowest career completion percentage and his fewest yards per game in a decade. But a Boston Globe column suggests the Pats deserve the benefit of the doubt on the field and claims they can still reach the Super Bowl. Doug Gottlieb, do the Patriots deserve the benefit of the doubt as they head into the postseason?
Yeah. I mean, how many times have we declared the Patriots dead, right? And then they're still...
A lot.
They go to Miracle Max. Yep. And he pumps them full of stuff.
And that's it.
And they were only somewhat dead, which, you know, they were only mostly dead.
Is
which
that a Princess Bride reference?
It is, okay. Which is mostly, they're mostly dead, which is...
Not all the way dead.
Not all the way dead. All the way dead, only thing you could do is go through the pockets for loose change.
I love you for knowing that.
Yeah,
very, okay. Very much.
I just watched The Princess Bride with my son.
Why, why would you not?
Go ahead.
Such a good movie.
He did love it.
Get back to the Patriots.
Didn't love it.
Really?
Yeah.
Nobody cares. Get back to the Patriots.
You really started it.
Princess Bride is a great movie.
Great movie, top 5.
So the Patriots are all the way dead or not?
They're mostly dead. I mean, like, look, do I think they're going to Super Bowl? No. All the teams in the AFC they have to go through, they've lost to, and they probably lose to another one with the Bills this weekend. They should have lost last time up in Orchard Park, right? Like, if Josh Allen doesn't get hurt and they don't
blocked punt touchdown change that game.
Dude, they put Matt Barkley in. I was like, dude, Matt Barkley's still in the league? I forgot. So they play the Texans ran them off the field.
The Ravens ran them off the field. Yep.
And we've seen the Chiefs run them off the field. And the Chiefs have proven, you go back to last week, they can play in bad weather. And, you know, we're one offsides penalty away from the Chiefs beating them last year. And they're not as good as they were last year. And all these teams are better. Look, we're all so scared to say Tom Brady's over the hill, but he's playing like guys over the hill. He doesn't have great weapons. Their defense is good, but good to a point, and you're playing in the AFC that has offenses that can score. But the biggest, I think he's most upset about the weaponry issue, because it's not like there's a team in the AFC where, like, oh, they can't score. The Ravens are scoring 40 a night. The Chiefs are going to put up points, and the Texans are going to put up points. How are you going to score three or four touchdowns?
This is exactly right. This is your, and this is 100% true. And what's the last piece of evidence we have that the Patriots are an excellent football team? You go through the schedule. I would say it's week one. Because Pittsburgh, we now know, actually, and by the way, they still had Ben Roethlisberger in that game, even if his elbow was dangling by a thread.
Right.
And Pittsburgh's a competent football team, and they crushed them. Since then, they have played very well defensively, great defensively, against awful teams.
Yes.
And they have been good but not great defensively against good teams, and awful offensively against anyone with a pulse. And people can keep arguing, well, Brady will come save the day. That game against Cincinnati, where he threw for 128 yards, where he was one of the eight worst yards per attempt games of his career. By the way, of the 16 worst yards per attempt game of his career, four have come this season. You can't blame this on the wide receiver. That is a missed throw. You can't blame this on James White. That is a missed throw. You cannot blame this. What is this, to Sanu? Whomever it's to, who the hell knows? It might have been to the official. Who are we going to blame this one on? These are missed throws by an inaccurate quarterback. And here's, people were so surprised yesterday that when we were doing the Breeze discussion, I said Brady's on a tier by himself.
Yes.
Greatest quarterback ever. Everyone knows he's the greatest quarterback ever. And in fact, the fact that he is still, what is he, the 20th best quarterback in the world at age 42 adds to his greatness. Because no other quarterback right. in the history of football would have been one of the 40 greatest quarterbacks playing at age 42. But to think that he's going to be able to tap into something in the postseason against a great
look,
team, we have no evidence.
He wasn't that much better last year. They went into the Super
points.
Bowl against the
and
Rams, and no one thought that they'd ever beat the Rams. The Rams were scoring a ton of points, and people left them for dead. Nobody gave them the benefit of the doubt, and they won.
Jenna, I think that's revisionist history.
Right, but remember, like, let's also remember, they had an easy draw in the first round, right?
Yeah.
Where they got the
Chargers
off of beating the Ravens, and they took the opening kickoff, marched down the field, and the Chargers absolutely folded like a pup tent, and that game was over. Then they go to Kansas City. They should have lost that game. He threw two, should have been three interceptions. I mean, so.
And in the Super Bowl, they scored one touchdown. They scored the.
And then
listen.
You take, and then you remember, you're also taking out
my point is
the biggest mismatch with Rob Gronkowski,
right.
who helped them in the run and the pass game. Take that off that team. Okay.
And then Brady's a year older.
Brady's a year older. Julian Edelman's a year older.
You guys can leave them for dead until they actually die.
They can go to Miracle Max.
I like it. Nick, you want to play a little drawing a blank?
For the first 25 games, yeah.
Yes,
please, Jenna.
Despite the loss last night, Lakers still tied for the best record in the NBA. Many are picking LeBron and company to win it all. But, Doug, the biggest threat to the Lakers in the NBA is blank.
Clippers. You have a star player and two guys who, it's not just that Paul George, I think, is a star. I think Kawhi Leonard's a superstar. But also they have the size, the length to defend him. And to defend LeBron James, you know, in terms of the makeup. I think the Lakers are probably, you know, going to add an Andre Iguodala, but I think the Clippers are the biggest challenger, far more so than anybody coming out of the
Clippers
East.
Have no one to match up with Anthony Davis. They got all this perimeter defender. They have no rim protection. Trez Harrell has been awesome this year, but that's not what his game
he's
is.
He's a scorer.
Right, rebounder, but he's not going to be able to match up with Anthony
Davis. Not really
Davis.
A defender.
I am not certain. We're going to get to see this Clippers-Lakers matchup, everyone's saying. Clippers are going to have to get through a couple rounds, probably on the road, at least in round two, if not also in round one. I am certain we're going to get to see Lakers-Bucks. They're the biggest threat. They have the only player in the league that has a credible claim to be the best player other than LeBron and Giannis. They should have gotten to the NBA Finals last year. They were a double overtime game three away from beating the Toronto Raptors going up 3-0. The Bucks can present real problems because of Giannis and because of the shooting on that team, so I say Milwaukee.
All right, sticking with the Bucks, they are four games clear of the rest of the Eastern Conference. So, Doug, the biggest threat to Milwaukee in the East is blank.
I think it's the 76ers. I mean, I think Joel Embiid might be the most talented player in the league.
Wow.
I mean, look, he's 7'1", and can really do it all. And our fear was Ben Simmons would have to score in the NBA playoffs. He's like their fourth leading scorer. I think they've done a nice job with Tobias Harris, integrating him into the offense. Like, they have experience. They felt the pain of losing on that rim rattler last year in Toronto. I think the 76ers are the biggest challengers in the East, and I don't think it's really that close in terms of anybody else.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's a challenger to the Bucks. I would be surprised if the Bucks have to face a Game 6 in the Eastern Conference playoffs this year. I think they are clearly head and shoulders better than everyone else. The Sixers don't appear to me to be better than last year. Embiid has not taken the leap I thought he would into MVP discussion. Obviously, Ben Simmons is the exact same guy, and while they add Al Horford, they lose
Jimmy Butler. Ben Simmons has made two threes this year. Yeah, that changes everything.
And there are a lot of really interesting teams in the East. The Raptors are good again. The Heat are good again. The Pacers, even without Oladipo, you saw them last night, they are good again. I think that all those teams are fighting to who gets to lose to the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals. The Bucks, to me, there's nobody that can contend with them out East.
All right, James Harden is once again leading the NBA in scoring, 39 points per game. However, it hasn't translated in the standings as the Rockets sit at fifth in the West. Some are speculating they could make a trade to bring in some help. Doug, the contending team that needs to make a trade the most is blank.
I mean, I just don't know what the Rockets are going to trade. They've made so many deals.
They have no assets to send.
Nothing else. I would say the Heat, you know? Bam Adebayo is quickly becoming a star in this league. Yeah, that to Jimmy Butler. They have a nice roster. You feel like if they could pluck a piece away from one of these teams that's trying to be bad, I would say the Heat would elevate themselves into that group that could be the runner-up in the East, if you will.
Listen, Spo continues to prove to everyone what a great coach he is. The culture of the Miami Heat organization, they never tank even when people think they should. But I'm going to go with the Celtics. The Celtics are better than most people expected. I think they are right where they're comfortable, being an overachieving, slightly under-talented team.
Yes.
And there is nothing Danny Ainge loves more than coming this close to making that major trade and not doing it. So I expect the Celtics to be in trade discussions. I think they will probably try to bring in a big man because Enes Kanter, friend of the show now, Enes Kanter, that, not shockingly, is not working out as well as they would have hoped with the type of team they're trying to be.
Can't guard the chair you're sitting in.
Of course. And so the Celtics are the team that Kimba's playing so well, Tatum's playing well, Jalen Brown's trying to prove he's worth that contract.
Hayward was playing well before he got hurt.
Absolutely, and Hayward, and it's not the type of injury he's going to keep him out, but he's already back. And so you expect Hayward to get back on that level. I say the Celtics, if they add a major piece, could be interesting. I don't know if they actually will, though. Danny Ainge loves those assets too much, man.
And we love Danny Ainge. This season, the Lakers have been led by LeBron and AD, but eventually your role players do have to step up. Last night, Rondo missed that potential game-tying shot. Doug, the most important role player for the Lakers is
How am I not going to pick the guy with the white guy receding hairline who couldn't shoot out of college, right? who's kind of stunningly athletic.
You watch Caruso and you're like, why couldn't that have been me?
Why could that be? Well, he's a lot bigger than me, but he's also a lot balder than me. He's a lot better than me as well. I think Alex Caruso is one of the, if not the straw that stirs this drink. He's changed this Lakers roster. They don't have anybody else outside of really LeBron, who can break down defense, create a shot for anybody else. As well as when he's in the game, it allows LeBron, plays point, but he doesn't have to play point defensively.
Yeah.
Legit, great defensive team, and LeBron becomes like your fifth best defensive player.
And last year, when the two-man lineup that was best for the Lakers, in all the mayhem of last year, was LeBron with Caruso. He's always had a great rapport with him, but I'm going to go Dwight Howard. Because what the style they're trying to play, these two bigs, I do not trust. I know JaVale's got some championships. Don't care. I do not trust JaVale in a big spot.
Nobody does.
Dwight is playing his role the best he's played a role
Correct.
In almost a decade.
Yes.
Like, he is energy. He's defense. He's good. Good. What's the word? Almost good. Not energy on the court, but energy within the locker room. People like being around him. He's fun. All these things that were a knock on him for the last few years. Dwight's been hugely important. Last night he was excellent. To me, he's the most important role
comeback player of the year.
I know.
You know, and he wasn't actually hurt.
Yeah.
He was just bad.
Yes.
And not well liked.
Mediocrity.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.